Good morning, Rex. How are you? Hi, Rex. Can you hear me?
Hi, Claire.
Hi, Candy. Can you hear me?
Can you hear me?
Great. I can hear and I can hear you. I'll turn my video on in one second. Yep.
Hey, Candy. How are you doing?
I'm well, thank you.
Sorry about the glitch.
No worries. It happens frequently. More frequently, we like to think.
In this new world. Rex?
Yes.
We have big event called the Connect, where we bring together alumni, and like it's the biggest, like an annual event. It's international, it's global, Bassman Global Connect. And we would love to have Agnes as a speaker. I'm gonna be sending the invitation. Would you like to, may I ask you to partner with us to send that invitation to her? I lost you, Rex.
I was connected for a second.
Oh, so you didn't get to hear.
I heard you have a big event and that was it.
Oh yeah, we're hoping to ask Agnes, former Minister of Health, wonderful Dean, if she would speak her.
Okay, let me send an email and connect you with her and you can give her the detail.
I'll send you an email we can connect us.
Okay, perfect, yeah.
Okay, great, so much.
No problem.
I think it would be great.
Oh yeah, she would like it too.
Yeah.
Claire will be, joining us?
She may not be able to.
Okay, so then should I introduce two of you?
Either that or we can introduce ourselves.
Yeah, okay, either one, whatever is easiest for you.
Yeah, I just don't want to do you injustice about your introduction. So,
who is, you can say, today we're excited to have two of our Babson colleagues with us, Professor blah blah, and our titles. I will let them introduce themselves before. Candy, you will speak first and introduce yourself and speak, and then I'll pick up at slide 20 something.
Yep.
And then okay, when it's my slide, I'll speak. How's that?
Okay. All right. So Candy, can you give me your title?
Yes, I'm a professor of entrepreneurship, Franklin W. Olin Chair.
Both of our titles are on the slide.
Yeah, I just shared my screen, so you've got the title there.
Okay. All right, so that's it. That's
and so who else will be here from Babson that we need to recognize?
There'll be Babson students and potentially Babson faculty on the line, so you can say we're excited to have students from and faculty from UGHE and students and faculty from Babson and other global healthcare entrepreneurs. Or
so we won't have a chance to introduce everybody. So I'm just going to ask people to put a note in the chat about where they are and their superpower. And so that'll, and then we can just sort of scroll through that because tied on. We could spend 20 minutes on introductions and I don't think that's a good use of our time.
Oh yeah, we never did that. We just introduced the speaker and then you just move along with your presentation.
Okay, well, I'm gonna have them just put, you know, some stuff in the chat. I have a couple of polls. Did Regina send you the polls?
Joseph, did you set up the polls?
Yes, I did. There are two polls, two questions.
Yeah.
Would you like to be more entrepreneurial? Yes or no? And the second is, which do you prefer, puzzles or stories?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And then for my section, just to be sure, Candy, so for slide 17, I just present the situations. I'm going to use the WHO 2021 challenges. For slide 18, I will say what your impact statement is. And there I'll give an example of a global healthcare entrepreneur that is different, you know?
Yeah, that's perfect.
And then I'm going to share it in the chat. We're going to talk about them, or they're just going to share it in the chat.
Well, so I don't know if we have time, you know, we can pull out a couple. I mean, when, you know, for the, I have a couple of questions I'm going to ask them to answer in the chat. And for, you know, I'll pull out a couple and read a few.
But okay, so maybe I'll do the same. I'll a couple and read a few. And then I'll go into why collaborations are important, really think about it health systems wise. And then I'm going to end with, you know, it requires an NTNA mindset. Link between health and well. And I'm going to turn it over to you for slide 21.
Right. And I, and again, at that point, you know, hopefully that'll be around 10, 15 ish. And I'll just, you know, I can walk through the last couple slides, then we'll have a few minutes for questions if anybody has questions at the end.
Perfect.
But the point of this, the session is really the experiential exercise. Let's see, I'm going to get some music going. About what, 12 or something?
Oh, we still have like about 8 minutes or three here.
Okay.
Oh, you're way early.
Let's sit here.
Did you see anything?
What's that?
You're fine.
Oh, no, I'm fine. Okay. Tell her thanks. Tell her thank you. So the chat, the poll you have, Rex, is it's entrepreneurial. It's not how entrepreneurial are you? because I had a different. Change that real quick.
Hey, Katie, what time?
I have about 8:56.
But yeah, it's the same time, so a few more minutes to go.
Yeah, so I'm going to put a little music on as they're coming in, just.
or Candy, you can start singing too.
I don't sing, but I play other people's music. If I did sing, everybody would decide to go home. So we're going to do, let's see, something inspirational. I'm going to do this.
Candy, you'll be moving the slide so I can just say next slide.
Yeah, I'll do it, definitely.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you for this musical introduction, Professor Brush. This is fantastic. Great way to start.
What did you say, Wilkina?
Just saying thank you for the musical introduction. This is a great way to start. Yeah. I'll be introducing you all probably at about 9:02. We'll get going.
Okay. Yeah, I do music every time. It's always a matter of finding the right music.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you all so much for joining us today. Welcome, welcome. As you all are joining in, I understand that many students at UGHE are in the same room in the same space. So tell us where you're from. For those of you, I know we have some guests from around the world that are in the room today. So feel free to just type in the chat where you're from. Yes, UGHE, of course, we are so excited to have you all. And we get started. We have pleasure today, Boston in the rooms, Amsterdam, welcome, welcome. Welcome again, Arushi from India. So this is just such a gift that we're able to share the space with one another to continue to learn, continue the series on global healthcare entrepreneurship. I have the privilege of introducing two scholars, researchers, masterminds that I just look up to so much. So Professor Candida Brush and Dr. Claire Cecile Pierre, I'll introduce them briefly and they can tell you more of their stories as well. Professor Brush is the Franklin W. Olin Professor of Entrepreneurship Research and conducted one of the first and largest studies in the U.S. She has co-authored reports for OECD, the Foundation, and presented her work at the World Economic Forum in Davos and the U.S. Department of Commerce. So welcome, Professor Brush. We also have with us Claire Pierre, Executive Director of the Carrie Murphy Healy Center for Global Healthcare Entrepreneurship at Babson College. She is also the Chief Medical Officer of Harbor Health Services and joined Babson after health. So comes with just such a rich global health perspective and experience with us today. So with without further ado, Professor Brush, Dr. Pierre, welcome.
Thank you so much. Well, it's a pleasure to be part of this program, and we're really excited that we have such a diverse group of people here from so many different places. I just want to remind you, and if you have some colored markers, that would be helpful too. We're going to do some exercises, and so you'll need the pencil and paper, so I just wanted to get that out. And so as Wilgina said, first of all, thank you, Wilgina, for the opportunity to be part of this program and the opportunity to work with you and Claire on it. I think it's a really important intersection between entrepreneurship and global healthcare. And so I'm really happy to have the chance to spend some time with you all this morning. It's going to be afternoon where you are. Just briefly, I'm a professor of entrepreneurship. I've been at Babson for 16 years. My PhD strategy, but my research has been in the entrepreneurial arena, studying mostly gender and women's entrepreneurship and how new ventures acquire resources, in particular Glover on a new project, trying to delineate the domain of healthcare entrepreneurship. And my partner today is Claire Cecile Pierre. Claire, you want to say a few words?
Yes, good morning, good afternoon, good evening maybe to some. So it's so exciting to be here. And I am Claire Pierre. I'm executive director of the New Center for Global Healthcare Entrepreneurship. As a physician, I trained as a physician and really had a passion for social medicine and for the idea that access to care should be available to all. And so my career had two paths. One was focused in the US, looking at how to use technology for the past 20 years. And then second side was really to work beyond the US, boundaries in multiple countries, Zambia, South Africa, and elsewhere, but a lot in Haiti. Increasing access to care and health systems and their delivery. So it's exciting with this group, exciting to have each process and program, and now everyone here. So we're hoping you all enjoy today's conversation.
Great, thank you. So by way of getting started, Regina had asked you to put in the chat where you're from, but one thing that we would like you to post is, what is your superpower? And we're gonna come back to this a little bit later in the session, but all of us have sort of one talent that that we are really good at. And so I'd like you to put your superpower in one word in the chat, and I'll start and say what my superpower is, and Claire can give her superpower. Then we're gonna come back to the session. So I think my superpower is probably mentoring. I love to work with students and faculty and try to help people develop their careers, their research, and who they are as people. So mentoring is my superpower. How about you, Claire? What's your superpower?
I think mine is collaboration. I enjoy teamwork. I'm actually miserable if I had to do anything alone. I'd like to see us all get there. I like the challenge of figuring out the problems together, but I also like the figuring it out. So collaboration is my sweet spot.
And these two superpowers are important to what we're talking about today, which is entrepreneurial thought and action. And so I'm seeing a couple of people post things in the chat. Think about it. And as I said, we will come back to it. So what have we got in store today? Here's our agenda for today. And so we're going to introduce you to the entrepreneurial thought and action methodology. And we're going to explore the entrepreneurial mindset. And we're going to do this through a series of exercises. And again, you'll need paper and colored pencils or markers, so make sure you have those available. I have a question in action. Are you entrepreneurial? Now we have a poll that we're going to do. And so the poll should appear in the chat. To just do that question, are you entrepreneurial? Yes or no? And I think that's going to show up here. So when you see the poll, okay, would you like to be more entrepreneurial? We'll do that poll instead. And I hope it's 100%. So if you're able to answer the poll question, that would be great. I know some of you might be on your cell phones and it may be difficult. You can't answer the poll question, just put a note in the chat. Would you like to be more entrepreneurial? I think most people would. And so if that's true, if most people are entrepreneurial, oh yeah, see 100%. This is great. This is the kind of response we really want to see, right, Claire? We want to see people want to be more entrepreneurial because we want to help them get there. This goes back to power. So the second question I have for you, and this is something you will have to answer in the chat. I'd like you to put one word in the chat that defines what it means to be entrepreneurial. In other words, when you think of being entrepreneurial, what does that mean to you? Fast learner, adapting. So you get a few more responses here. Managing risk and fear, self-starter, brave, innovative, risk taker, problem solver, yes, resourceful. So we have a lot of different answers to this question. Some of them are action-based, they're verbs. Some are more descriptive about the qualities of an entrepreneur. But generally speaking, the street definition, we like to say, of being entrepreneurial is those who start businesses. And at Babson, we think that's a very narrow definition because it limits our ability to talk about being entrepreneurial in a family enterprise or in a corporate setting or in a nonprofit or in government and other places. And so being entrepreneurial is more than just something, because there has to be something new that is created. The other point I want to make too is that in many cases we think about entrepreneurs having or being entrepreneurial is associated with certain traits or qualities. And the reality is that the personality traits really aren't whether you actually be entrepreneurial or not. The reality is that being entrepreneurial can be taught. You can learn how to do things entrepreneurially. It's more about your behavior and the actions you take rather than exactly who you are. Now, who you are is important. It may be really important in certain situations, but we believe that entrepreneurial thought and action and entrepreneurial behavior can be taught. Now, here's our definition at Babson. I just want to sort of set the stage here. But we define entrepreneurship as a way of thinking, acting, and being that combines the ability to find or create new opportunities with the courage to act on them. And someone actually did talk in the definitions in the chat and creating new opportunities. So there's a creation process and there's a way of thinking and acting. It's a mindset approach. And so to get you kind of involved in this, we have a series of we're going to do. Now, do any of you like to do puzzles? I did a lot of jigsaw puzzles. And so I have some puzzles that I'm going to show you. And I'm going to put the puzzle up, and then I'd like you to answer the question for the puzzle in the chat. And we'll see how it goes. They're going to go really fast. It's going to go bing, bang, bang. We'll see how well you do. So here's the first puzzle. Which of the four figures on the right completes the set? Well, let's see who gets it. And do it in less than a minute. Some of you must be competitive when it comes to puzzles, right? Which one completes the set? C, D, Arushi, C. C's. Okay, and the answer is D. Each line contains two red dice and one blue die. It contains 2, 3, and 5. So the missing image is that of a red die. So it's number 3. So D is the correct answer. But we're not done yet. We have in the empty box. Let's see if you can pick this one out. White, okay. If this was a competition, red, okay. So you're looking at colors, sort of thinking about what colors would be missing. But actually the answer has to do with the number of letters. And so it's either, so you got this one correct. And each tile is one less than those following in the following row. Hence, there must be only 3 letters in the empty tile. So I've got another one, and they're going to get increasingly more difficult. So what color goes in the empty triangle? This is a little bit more difficult. Let's see if Emmanuel can continue his winning streak here. Eight. Okay, Anne says it's 8. A couple people say 8. You like 8? Do I hear 7? Do I hear 6? 7? Okay, we got a lot of 8s here. All right, and the answer is? 3. the top number minus the bottom left-hand number is multiplied by the bottom right-hand number to get the number. In this case, it would be 6 minus 5 times, so 6 minus 5 times 3, and the answer would be 3. Right? You liking these puzzles? At least you know there's a clear answer, right? All right, I got one more, and this is a really difficult one. We'll see how you do with this one. Do you see, and this is, I know we've seen this a lot of times, and so this is really challenging, but let's just see what we get. That was tough. Well, Gina says this is tough. It's going to be even tougher now. See how many triangles you see here. Six, 10. 9, 10. Okay, well, let's see what the answer is here. And so there's all these different ways to sort of describe the spaces, but the answer, there's 18 standalone triangles, okay? And then there's assembled triangles where you take different parts of the puzzle and put it together. So the answer is 18, right? I told you they were getting progressively more difficult. And so that's our puzzle part, right? So we've done puzzle exercises where there's sort of a clear answer to what you're doing. And we sort of see how people did on that. Now we're going to do something completely different. It's time to write a story. And so I would take the piece of paper that I asked for pencils and draw a story that references your one word superpower that uses the color green and the word bicycle. And I'm going to give you about 3 to 4 minutes, and then we'll see if any of you want to share your stories, and then we'll debrief on this. And I'll put a little bit of music on to inspire you. And we'll see how this goes. Okay, let's see here. What should we listen to? Let's do this. This should be an inspirational one.
There's no heaven. It's easy if you try. No hell below. Above a stormy sky.
Give you about one more minute to finish up your drawings and your stories. We'll see if anybody wants to share stories.
Imagine all voices.
Okay. So I'm going to stop sharing here. And if any of you share, and so if you just put your story up in front of your camera and tell your story, we would love to hear what you came up with your one word superpower, the color green and a bike. Want to share? You can just unmute and share your story.
Hi.
Arushi, right?
Yeah, hello.
Okay, tell us your story, Arushi.
Okay, so I'm pretty bad at drawing, but I hope you can make sense of it. So I think my superpower is that I'm always eager to learn more. And that is the thing that drives me most of all. So the way I envision it is that this is a tree and a tree of my thoughts. And I try to explore different avenues of that tree. And when I'm bicycling, that signifies that I am working towards it. So I'm working towards lighting the bulbs of the different avenues or different scenarios of that tree. Does it make sense?
That's wonderful. Let's give Arushi a hand. That was great. A very creative story. And I wove in your superpower. That's great. Thank you. Who else like to share their story? You don't have to be a good artist. You just have to be able to share a story. We need at least one more, probably two.
Emmanuel, were you clapping or raising your hand?
Angelo is going to tell
us. I didn't have the chance to draw it, but I was thinking about, and then because I don't, so the only thing that I try to understand, thinking about a bit the elements that you put, and I found this picture. The bits represent where I am, or basically maybe related to a story or a question. I can share the screen if you want, and like, so can I share the screen?
Do.
So something like that, maybe.
Ah.
I mean, because I'm in Amsterdam also, when you say green and then the bike. So immediately I try to think about like that. It was not a real story, but of course you can build a story about this. So then I thought about sustainability or a place like this that today are really beautiful. So this is the only thing that I had in mind. So the maximum I could do.
So that's a wonderful sort of drawing. It sort of gives you a sense of peace. But, you know, you're sort of traversing that. So it's really got a nice sort of frame to it. Really nice job. Thank you, Angela. Great, great image. Now, did Emmanuel have a story he wanted to share? Maybe one more? Part of being entrepreneurial is putting yourself out there, taking a leap, testing ideas. One more person want to share. Well, not having much success. If you change your mind, please let us know and we will share your story. So I'm going to share my screen again. Here we go. And so if you think about what we just did a series of puzzles and we did a series and you wrote a story. Another poll question. So if you would like to answer the poll question, whether you preferred the puzzles or the story, we'd like to know what you thought. We have a poll question coming. There it is. But the answer is Okay, we have an answer to our poll yet. That's really interesting. So a lot of you preferred the stories. Even though you didn't really want to share them, you might have been a little bit shy about what the story was, but very interesting. And so we're going to talk a little bit about why you preferred the stories or the puzzles. For those who said they really liked the puzzles, would you like to jump in and say what you liked about the puzzles? And you can just unmute and jump in and say what you're... Why did you like the puzzles? Or you can put it in the chat, either way. So 37% of you like puzzles. What was it about the puzzles that you liked?
Well, while someone might be, yeah, there, someone said there is an answer. I think that's great. I was gonna say, when we do these in person and we do the puzzles, I do feel like there's a clarity, right? I have the picture, I know what I'm building, and I just do the puzzle and that's it. It's very clear. So someone else is just mentioning that assignment was clearer.
Yes, okay. And so there was a known outcome. You knew it was a correct answer. And it was a logical kind of process that you went through to sort of figure out, how do I solve this puzzle? And so that's a little different than the stories. And so for the stories, why those of you 67% like the stories, what was it you liked about the stories? And again, you can post in the chat or you can just jump in. Emmanuel, are you raising your hand?
Yeah, I was just going to say about puzzles. I do love puzzles because basically they make me think. And sometimes I get it right, but even if I don't get it, I just get to learn from the answer. Just plug in the answer and see how
I like it. That's great. That's a great reflection. So even if you don't get it right, you're still engaging in that sort of logical process. So what about the stories? What did you like about doing the stories? And anybody can jump in. Because the stories it's very open-ended, right? I gave you three kind of cues, your superpower, the color green, and a bicycle. And so the idea of the story had to include those three things, but there was no clear boundaries to what you could have written about. And so freedom to offer unique perspectives, Arushi says. Rex says, allow room for doing anything. Absolutely. Stories are connected to catharsis. Oh, that's a nice comment, Angelo. Very nice.
And so it feels more creative, I think, is one of the things that as I was watching it, I felt.
Yeah, it's more creative because you go beyond the bounds of, so puzzles are very bounded. And stories are unbounded. And you start the story, do you know how it's going to end? Probably not. And as Leah's saying, there's no wrong answer because it's a story that you have created that's unique to you. So some really good thoughts here. So let me just share with you a little bit more information on how we puzzles and stories. So we just did this, the puzzles and the stories. So we like to think of puzzles as being what we call prediction reasoning. And we think of stories as being what we call creation reasoning. Two different, you need both, but they operate differently. And so if you think about the prediction reasoning, prediction usually involves some sort of planning, whereas creation is more experimentation. It's small actions. In prediction, a lot of times you're going to wait till you have the resources that you need, and you're going to not act until resources you need to execute. But in creation reasoning, you're, and it's more, I know exactly what resources, what actions are going to work. And so there's more trial and error. The prediction reasoning, you're looking for expected returns. Whereas with creation reasoning, because you're trying something that's in an uncertain environment, there's something that we call affordable loss. In other words, what can you afford to lose by doing this particular activity or this sense of experimentation? So a lot of entrepreneurs will say, I'm going to set aside $5,000 to test my product. And if the $5,000 is gone and I still don't have a viable product, then I'm not going to go further. And so it can be money, it can be time, it can be other resources that you have. So this concept of affordable loss is part and parcel to creation reasoning. And how much time you spend on something, like with the story, you didn't, you had no idea. There was no expected return because you didn't know where it was going to end up. So the story was more creation reasoning. Prediction reasoning is linear, whereas creation is iterate and you try it again. In prediction reasoning, we're trying to optimize, whereas in creation reasoning, we're experimenting. It's small experiments to try new things. Prediction avoids failure, whereas in creation reasoning, you work first. If the story doesn't work out correctly the first time, you can always try it again. You can iterate on it. And the same is true with entrepreneurs who are, you know, creating new healthcare medical devices. You know, they may not hit on the right medical device at the time, so they'll have to you know, sort of reconstitute whatever that product is so that it can be more successful. We think of creation being competitive, and we think of creation being collaborative. Another activity is we do the stories in groups. The story as a group. And of course, we also add one more layer where you can't talk to each other. You have to learn how to be collaborative. And so there's some parallels I think you'll see with global health. And I know that we're going to talk about that in a few minutes. Prediction is more knowable. You have an answer. You know what's going to happen. Whereas creation reasoning is more unknowable. You don't know what's going to happen or where it's going to end up. And so prediction reasoning, we think about getting the data, planning, and action, build. And so two different sort of mindsets. And of course, a key thing is that most of us are trained in prediction reasoning. I mean, most of the, if you have a degree in science or engineering, you're really trained in prediction reasoning. My PhD is in strategy, and I was trained, you know, firms, it was very predictive. You know, you identify the problem, you go out, you pick a couple options, do the pros and cons, figure out how many resources you execute. Whereas creation reasoning is much different. Starting with what you have, the affordable loss concept, it's iterative, experimenting, you make mistakes, and you just don't really know how it's going to end up. And this is that in thought and action, you need both. You need prediction at different times in the process. And so most of us need more work on creation reasoning, and that's part of what we're working on today. And Claire's going to spend some more time sort of talking about creation reasoning in global health. And so the reality is more than ever, the world needs entrepreneurs of all kinds. And again, entrepreneurs or entrepreneurial thinking who can work in any context and who can think and act entrepreneurially into reality and create social and economic value for themselves and others. We like to think that social and economic value are created simultaneously. And so with that, I'm going to turn it over to Claire, and she's going to dig in a little bit on how entrepreneurial thought and action and this entrepreneurial mindset makes a difference in global healthcare. So over to you, Claire.
So much. Oh my goodness, that exercise is so great. I've done it a few times, and every time it's great to see people's answers and reactions to it. It's also interesting how we fall into two different categories every time. And so with that, I'm going to start now and think, now that we're thinking about the entrepreneurial thinking and we realize that we need both, let's step back and think about what global health means. And a lot of you are experts in this because you're already doing this every day. Last week, I remember Professor Wang spoke to us about this idea of innovation. It's the implementation of new or significantly improved products, services, or processes. And it can also imply new organizational models. So new methods of delivering services to customers, or even new approaches to what we do. So when we think about global health challenges, and when we add the equity lens to it and the delivery lens, quickly the opportunities are broad and they're huge, and there's a lot of room for improvement. I took a look at the World Health Organization's website and thought about what they saw as the top 20 or top 10 things that we need to focus on in 2021. You know, their list was pretty broad, and it included things that we would expect, right, related to the pandemic. You know, many of you are seeing this, the supplies, the technologies, the processes needed to deliver the testing, the treatment, and the vaccines for COVID around the world. And then there was a whole bucket, this idea of communicable diseases that have really plagued us for a long time and disproportionately in many, many countries and many regions. Cholera, malaria, and now Ebola coming back. Some items on the list were not things that we can actually touch or supplies. They were about like systems. WHO listed as a challenge for us global healthcare leadership. How do we get better data to make better decisions? How do we improve access? And the last one was solidarity. So if we go to the next slide, can we go to the next slide? As you're here in your career and in your studies, something that is driving you, there's something that you feel you would like to change. And so I would like to ask you to, in the chat, share with us what you would say your impact statement is. What is the desire that is driving you? What is the problem that you would like to solve, the problem that you see that needs to be solved? And what would your impact statement be? And as you're thinking about that, and I know it's gonna take a few minutes to put it in the chat, I'm gonna share a story. As I mentioned earlier, I've worked in many places. You know, I've been in Ethiopia and in Zambia briefly, and in South Africa also for a short time, and more intensively in Haiti. And I often think about patients like a young woman who lived on the other side of her. And she was really on the other side of an area that merely made her land where she lived an island. And she worked every day. She helped clean people's homes, and her wage was very small, but it was enough for her to feed herself and take care of her children. And she only got paid if she showed up for work. And at one point she became ill and she had to get healthcare. And for her, what that meant was that she had to lose a day worth of wages because she had to not go to work. She had to then pay for a boat ride to go and get care, right? And then once she got to the other side, the nearest city to her had small clinics that could take care of some things, but couldn't take care of, which was a mass that was growing. And so she had to go to the hospital that would accept her. And the nearest hospital that would accept her was in the capital. And so because of that, she had to pay not just for the boat, but also for a bus to get there. Now the cost of these two things combined was more than she made in a day. And the clinic was troubled. The clinic staff, you know, were really troubled by this. You know, we had seen this so many times, and you've probably seen this. And, you know, they were trying to figure out like this transportation issue for the patients and why and how this is a huge barrier to them coming and getting care, because sometimes they get delivered. So the clinics and the managers were thinking of different things. So one manager proposed, what if the clinic itself had its own bus, right? Like, hire a driver, have your own bus, and you pick up patients and you make sure that they get to the places that they need to go to. And even if it's 2 hours away to the capital, come back, you would do that. So there was a lot of like strategic thinking about that, a lot of prediction reasoning around it. Here's a strategy, we'll have this, we'll get one bus, we'd need as many patients, et cetera. But then we realized it was unpredictable how many patients would need that transportation to the capital. Some things we could solve right in the clinic. Be hiring a driver and the cost of a van for something that may or may not happen. Another person suggested, well, maybe we start a fundraiser to raise money to give the patients the money to go. And there's a bank there anytime the patients need them. We were struggling with this and having conversations when another clinic said they had the same problem, another clinic. And one said, have you met the circulation? Well, it turned out there was a company who said, hey, I'm a driver, I have a bus. Multiple clinics in the area need to transport people, not urgently, but just regularly. It may not be that every day in one clinic, but over time, multiple clinics will have enough people that need to get to the capital and back. What if my business was a social business that helped transport them and that helped the clinics and others pay for the transportation? So I love this story because when I think of it, and I'm thinking of a global healthcare entrepreneur, we sometimes think of the people within the health system that are designing things or people that are designing vaccines or technologies. But sometimes healthcare entrepreneurs are the ones who are addressing the social determinants of health. Like this person who decided to offer a low cost, effective, reliable way to transport patients in areas that need care. I also like this story because when I tell it, a lot of people think that I'm talking about my experience in Haiti or somewhere else, but this is actually, it is in my current clinic that we have this challenge. I'm hoping that in the chat, you're starting to share some of your statements. What are you passionate about? What are your desires? Here I'm coming to see some. So I see, how do we use technologies like AI, you know, artificial intelligence to address health challenges in rural India? I love this. This is really important. I talk about this all the time because phone can recognize my voice. Cars can themselves now. And somehow we're not using all of this intelligence and all this predictive ability to really address the needs of different people or to address the needs of those who need it most. So love that, very passionate about it. I love it and it addresses a great need. The other is to address the inequity to achieve their highest potential. Sickle cell disease is unfortunate that is yet there are treatments now available and there are people who are able to live longer and better, yet it's not equitably distributed. So I love the idea of focusing on the inequities to access for those who really need it. Someone else added preventive healthcare to be effective, affordable, and accessible. Ooh, with connected real-time predictive preventive care. You know, one of the biggest global health challenges that as we are getting better at creating medications and treatment or even increasing access, we're focusing so much on treatments and surgeries and medical delivery and interventions that we're forgetting prevention. So I really, really, really love the idea that we can step back. Many of the chronic diseases that can be prevented. And if we actually use predictive models, use the data, ahead. I love that. That is a great, I second that one. I add to it too. And then I see another one that's about equity, marginalized communities with some communities, prisoners, people don't necessarily think about them or want to work with them. Migrant workers in some places are excluded or in many ways enslaved still, meaning that they are they're given wages that are too low, living conditions with no wages and having to work hard just to be in that space. Children, mothers, men still continue to carry a huge burden for health. So agreed with that completely. And then reducing the burden of disease and moving towards prevention. So prevention is a big theme for us. So I love these impact statements. And as you're thinking through them and as you're thinking about what it would mean for the next step for you to work on them, I'd like you to think about what Professor Kendi Professor told us that as we're thinking about things in healthcare, there are two sides. there is the creative process. So you have this thing that you're passionate about. You're going to think of a solution that's different, out of the box, that no one else has done. But there's also the predictive process where you still need to think about how you're going to work with others and work within regulations. So I'm going to go to the next slide, if that's And when we think about health systems, we realize that this to it. There are different models. Some of you use the World Health Organization 6 building blocks, governance, supplies. And some of you, we could go to the next, okay. And some of you think of this, you may have seen this, especially for those of you who have talk about staff, stuff, space, systems, and social support. As you yourselves as entrepreneurs, I love that 100% of you see yourselves as people who will disrupt, recreate, push us to do better in healthcare around the world. It will be great for you to remember that all of these pieces come with health systems and interventions, new entrepreneurial ideas, new solutions are needed in each one of those boxes. And they're very much interconnected. Whether you're trying to do a support system like the transportation, whether you're trying to use AI or technology to improve what people understand, you'll have to think of the staff who needs to be educated about the AI tool or the patients and training and the stuff you'll need like the tablets or the phone and so on and so forth. To train in them. And now there's a virtual idea. So do people have access to that? So all of those things are really important as you think of how you will need to collaborate. But also I'm hoping you see this forum, this very group right here on this chat, like three of you supported each other's idea around prevention. How would you collaborate with each other as you take on new angles for global healthcare entrepreneurship? Okay. And so the next slide, when we have this ETNA mindset, it's a way of thinking, and which is what's a great tool about it. It is something that all of you can have once you train to think that way. You have to start with what you care about. It was clearly stated here in the chat, right? Start with that. And for some, it's doing something new. For it's the frustration of watching something not work in your system, right? I work in the hospital, and every time we make the same comes to injecting insulin. I'm frustrated with that. So you want to make it safer. So whatever your care is, whatever you desire, that's the first part. And then you would start with who you are and what you know, because you don't have all of the answers. You just have to be able to start somewhere. And you can start with what you have and take small actions and then repeat and change. And then as you get old, as you get bigger, and as you're starting to test and think about the next patients or affecting people, then you start really thinking about the regulations and your strategy around what's correct, right? So now there are rules. So create and predict, constantly straddling both as you're using your passion to drive you to do this work. Lastly, it's important to bring others along. And that I really like, and actually this image that I really like. Some of you decided to go into global healthcare because you see healthcare as a human right. Others, for me, like me, see it as a way to fight poverty with health. But the link between health and wealth is actually real. And we know that it's a cyclical relationship. And we know that the social determinants of health happen to be, in some ways, the social determinants of wealth. So as you are creating or innovating or revising or improving, I'm hoping you continue to think about how to collaborate with each other and really think about this health and wealth connection and continue to identify with yourselves as entrepreneurs as 100% of you did. So with that, I'm going to hand it over to Professor Bush and we'll take it from there.
I think we are for questions. So feel free to first, I'll give a round of applause That was an excellent presentation. Thank you all so much. So finding my reaction, yes, and adding my hand claps as well. Maybe we stop the share and then that way we can see everyone kind of at once and we can spend some time asking questions. Feel free if you would like to just raise your hand and just unmute yourself and we can ask questions that way or type them in the chat. So I know I have one to get us started. We were able to spend some time thinking about our impact statements. And then kind of that next step would be around who I am and what I know. Can you talk a little bit about the relationship between those two and why it's so important to really pause and or just your experiences, right? Able to address your impact statement.
Yeah, great question, Regina. And I think I'm sure Claire has an answer too. So we'll both sort of chime in here. But for anything that you're going to work on, I mean, you're trying to solve global health problems, which, as Claire mentioned, they're wicked problems. They're complicated. Causes are unknown and complex. And there's no single cause. And so you're trying to solve problems in a space that is really, really messy. And so so to some sort of entrepreneurial initiative, and it could be a very small thing. It could be like providing dental care for people in the barrios in Costa Rica. It could be something that is, you know, a very small project, but it really starts with what you care about. We all know that entrepreneurial ventures tend to succeed better if the entrepreneurial really cares about the business, really cares about the product, or really cares about this offering that they have. And I think you probably all have this experience too, if there's something that you really care about. So that connection between what you care about, which is a values-based kind of impact statement, there's something that you want to accomplish, that has to be connected with, you know, your talents in some way, because are giving you the capabilities to carry out action to begin. And then, of course, this comes along. And so one other piece that I was thinking about as Claire was speaking is, you know, how started. And I'm sure that many of you probably say, how to start. Advice on that is that you have to practice being entrepreneurial in little ways. And so a challenge for you, for example, is takeout food from a restaurant you've never ordered from before. Now, that's a very small action, but you're testing something that you don't know, right? You're trying something you've never tried before. And so you can think about your daily life. And if you push yourself to try things you've never tried before, your behavior will be more entrepreneurial. And you match that practice of entrepreneurial behavior with what you care about and your capabilities. You have the foundation then to be successful in carrying out a global healthcare venture. And I know Claire probably has a few comments on that as well.
Agreed completely. And I think knowing what you can do is important because it helps you bring your best. It also helps you know what you can't do, because if there are certain things that you can't do, you realize the importance of partnering. So for the clinical background, you may really know why diabetes or why vaccines are important and so on and so forth. So you should be the person communicating that, knowing what data should be followed and so on and so forth. But you may not know how technologies work. So reach out to colleagues, reach out to friends, go back to your school, go to the ideas to really say, I see this problem and I'm willing to do this part. And I'm gonna ask person X to do that. And sometimes we think of technology as like technology, but it can be pen and paper. Many improvements that started tracking patterns. So try something, test it, write it down, try something, test it, write it down. And then say, well, it's taking me a long time to see the pattern. I would love to say to a programmer or someone else that I need to do this, look for a competition and so on and so forth. So there are all of these opportunities out there, but it's the ability to start and to start small and to start with what you have, and then reach out to a friend, reach out to a colleague, reach out to a mentor, and then start building interventions.
Yeah. Well said, Claire. That was great.
Thank you for sharing. Other questions? You can feel free to type them in the chat or raise your hand and unmute. All right, Rex had a question, but Claire, you were clairvoyant in answering it early, so that's great. I'll ask another one before we get going. So that's kind of the first step. And then, so Professor Brush, you talked a little bit about affordable loss. Mm-hmm. So I kind of wanted to go back to that step. How do you kind of even practical examples where you thought about what that affordable loss was, if it was a number, if it was time, you know, how can we think more practically? I've heard some entrepreneurs talk about it more in terms of time. So I will test this for this long. How do you make those decisions?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really good point, Wildina. And so being entrepreneurial, you know, does involve trying things, new things. You're doing things done before. And so there are risks associated with it. And some of the risks are not always financial. It could be a social risk. You know, what happens if I fail? Or it could be a personal, you know, sort of risk. You know, what happens to my bank account if I fail? It could be a family risk. So there's lots of different risks that sort of play in. And so the idea of the affordable loss is that you're setting aside a set of a time frame that allows you to test and experiment with the idea and make a difference, or if that product or idea is feasible in some way. In other words, it can be created. And if somebody cares about it, we always think about good entrepreneurial opportunities as being feasible, desirable, and viable. And so the desirable piece is probably the first important. Do people need this? And so in the ETNA process, what you're doing is you're putting an idea out there or a concept or an initiative. You're getting early feedback whether or not that makes sense. And then once you've done that, you can start to say, well, is health, you know, issues maybe with patenting, or if it's a product, if it's services, you've got regulatory processes you have to think through. And then, of course, is it viable? Initiative in a way that that it can be economically appropriate. And so those are the sort of three pieces that I would throw out there. Claire, you probably have some thoughts on that as well.
Yes, definitely. I think when I think of affordable loss, it's a complex concept because it has to do both with what you as an entrepreneur personally can afford to lose, right? Or afford to invest, as well as you as a, if you're in a system, can afford to lose. So the examples that come to mind are, you know, back to the transportation idea. I think the person who started that already had a bus, right? That was doing transportation for other things and was able to shift. And what that meant was, okay, I know I'm making, you know, $1,000 with regular services, but I'm really passionate because my aunt didn't make it because she wasn't able to afford it. So I want to make sure I get this option. So I know that I may lose $50 because this one bring me $950. Can I live with that with my family? No, but that's going to be what's happening next year because I'm going to only have 2 clinics. But if I get 3, 5, 6, 7 clinics, I can actually make more than 1,000. So it's this idea of assessing what you can invest now with what you have and what you can do. The second happens when you have CEOs trying to make this decision. So I am the head of this clinic and I need to invest in, you know, a new service, right? Resources, I know the community needs this. Everybody needs this new, you know, maternal child health program, or everybody needs this new outreach program to help people be more engaged or to just give people access to the information they need to own their health and be more preventive, have preventive services. So know when to and so forth. but I have to make the decision between the money I need to spend on surgery, to spend on women's healthcare, and the money I need to spend on primary care versus the money I'm going to spend on preventive services. And I have to remind myself that when I invest in preventive services now, it's the loss of money right now, but I will get money back for the community when in 10, 15, 20 years, we have fewer diabetes that are hospitalized. Mm-hmm. So affordable losses is about where you are relative to it and where your system is relative to the change, and making sure that you're deliberate about making the decision so that you know you're taking the time to do this because it's worth it later.
Yeah, it's a really good point. A great explanation and example there, Claire. And I think too, the other chat points out, I'm not sure, that's another important factor. So you have your affordable loss set aside of what you can afford to lose, and you're doing the small experiment. But when you find out it doesn't work, you're flexible and you pivot quickly. Whereas in active reasoning, it's much more complicated because you've got, you know, large amounts where you've tried to assess the risks and there's more riding on it. You're trying to compete, you're trying to scale. So the entrepreneurial process on can be really, really small amount of resources before you risk more resources to scale and grow that idea.
That's a great point. Other questions? And that makes me think, even if some of you want to share your experiences and how this relates to your experiences, Leah, would you mind just sharing a little bit? I know, Leah, we've talked a little bit about your organization in the past, so maybe you can just give a little bit of context, Dr. Pierre and Professor Brush, and how this relates to the work that you're doing.
Thank you so much, Dr. Pierre. Your session has been quite beneficial, especially telling Regina, understanding the mix of talent and resources and efforts that are needed to solve these problems with that entrepreneurial mindset. My question, or maybe something that I will reflect back to you, is that how does this come, especially in impoverished areas or spaces where you know you need all the staff, the space, the support. However, bringing those things together collectively in that mix, in that balance is really, I won't say impossible, but it's not as easy as in specific areas, in specific settings. So I don't know how you figure, I know internet and technology has allowed people to connect in different ways and allow of resources outside years to be streamlined online, but like in impoverished areas, it's I don't know how people do it. Maybe you have experience in one of your classes in Babson about this kind of setting.
Maybe Claire wants to start.
I'm happy to start. Yes. So Leah, can you remind me what you're focusing on right now?
So I run a nonprofit that addresses the inequities around sickle cell. So I work in a very impoverished area in a field that is has very few resources in sub-Saharan Africa. Research is increasingly being populated, so the space is opening up, but to merge the solving the problems of healthcare with the entrepreneurial mindset on an entrepreneurial idea is relatively new in this space. So how would you now initiate that coming from my background, lives with sickle cell and trying to innovate around this, not only to bring more funding and more priority, but also to affect policy in that regard.
Great. I think, so I grew up in Haiti, and one of my closest friends actually lives with sickle cell, and it's very common in our families and so on and so forth. And I know how hard it is to get access to care and how hard it is for people to. It's almost seen as common. It's almost seen as predictable that some people will have it and will have a hard life. It's the pain that is often underestimated. So your story, and I'm glad that this is something that you're passionate about. I think your very story is one of your resources, right? Like there is the lived experience, and we find that a lot of entrepreneurs start with their own or their family story, and that actually draws attention and draws people to come in, listen, because in their eyes, you're an expert this thing you know as much about. So first, I think your own story is important. I love that you're open to research because you know that your story is of one in a disease complicated. So different people experience it differently and the treatments available are different. Already doing the second part of educating yourself. I think the third piece for me is scope. So sometimes when you have like what I would like to see 5 years or next year or what I would like to see in the world is that there's better access to treatment for people with disease in Port-au-Prince, right? Then I have to say, okay, I may not be able to get the whole city. Let me see if I can get one hospital. If I can't get the whole hospital, I can get one clinic. And then you start a coalition of people who understand this is important. And then you decide, am I going for the funding track or am I going for the policy track? And if and it, so it's about taking these small steps and building as you go along. Because people have 5,000 other priorities, right? Like there's still, you know, there's an outbreak here, there's, you know, and so on and so forth. So it's the consistency, the clear messaging, and the repeated small steps of bringing people together and, hey, did you know this was an issue? Did you know if we came together, and although we didn't bring up a lot of money together, if we brought this small fund together, we can actually send 20 text messages to tell people that this is important. If we know, and then you can decide to refine and focus what your messaging is so that you can actually start showing success. So maybe what you want is to get people to realize pain crises can be supported this way. So you're going to have a campaign with the medical association or the nurses association in your area to help get everybody to understand. Once they recognize that, then remember you or your organization as a person who helped them learn this, and then you gain more credibility and keep building. Mm. So the ETNA mindset is start like literally small, build your brand, which is build who you are, build your recognition, create your coalition, and then this is what your strategy is going to be. Are you focusing on treatment, delivery, or policy, and then tackle slowly as you go along. Also be happy to connect with you offline if you'd like more about your specific strategies.
Thank you so much, Claire. That was really, really helpful.
Example, Claire. Really, really great, great advice there. And so I don't have much to add except that I would only say that, you know, the whole idea of starting small, I mean, and it can be a very simple level. I know when created new institutes at Babson, we'll have something as simple as like a brown bag listening session, where you just invite people who are interested in the topic to come and share their ideas. And a lot of times if you get people in the room who care about the same problem, then some good things will happen. And people will start to say, well, maybe we could try this, maybe we could try that. And so I think, you know, a very small scale, and you really don't need a lot of resources to have a brown bag lunch. Brown bag meaning everybody brings their own lunch, right? I'm not sure if the term may be Americanism, but I think that's really true. So really great thoughts on that, Claire.
That was great. Any other comments or questions before we wrap up? Either, you know, questions or just reflection from today and how you might use it going forward. Well, if not, oh, I hear someone.
That was me. Okay. I have a couple of slides just to wrap up that. So once again, thank you for some great ideas, great conversation here. So just by way of wrapping up, there's really sort of principles that we like to think of or four pillars for the entrepreneurial mindset. So I'm going to leave you with four thoughts. And so these thoughts are, start with what you have. And this is this idea of what you care about, the capabilities you have, and your superpower. So start with is really the beginning, entrepreneurial thought and action, the beginning for being entrepreneurial. Then the second thing is you want to be the only. You don't want to be just like anybody else. You want to be the only. And that would set you apart, particularly in global healthcare, because you'll be doing something that is a little bit unique and differentiated, which gives you a better chance of success. And then, of course, you're creating the future. And in healthcare, probably one of the few industries creating the future in so many ways. And so this is the novelty, the newness that's really important to being entrepreneurial, the opportunities that are out there and how we create future businesses that will solve problems, particularly these complicated, wicked problems. And then finally, action trumps everything, and that's doing something. And again, I was thinking about what Leah was saying, you know, in less developed country environments, you know, we have lots of women who start businesses and they're starting businesses out of necessity, but it's the action that carries them forward. They're doing something. And so, and again, they're doing something with what they know, who they know, and put it together. So those are the four pillars for entrepreneurial thought and action. And so we just like to leave you with, you know, an assignment is to go do something entrepreneurial. And it can be just a small step. It can be something that you've never done before, but go try something. Go try something new, and you'll practice being entrepreneurial. And so with that, thank you very much to Claire and Wilgina. This was great. I really enjoyed the conversation. Claire, thank you.
Thank you all so much. And really, the comments and your passions are really going to make the world a better place. That brings me joy. It brings me hope. So thank you so much.
Yes, thank you so much. Professor Brush and Dr. Pierre. I was going to ask Dr. Rex Wong if you have anything to share before we log off today.
No, I just want to thank you very much for joining us, and thank you, Professor, as well as Dr. Claire, doing this. And it seems like everybody's enjoying it. And unfortunately, some of them left us a little bit earlier because of other commitment. But just want to let everybody know we still have one more session next week, and we also have a very exciting speaker. And so don't miss out. And thank you for joining us again.
Yes, thank you all. Before logging off, please provide feedback at the link in the chat. And thank you all so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Wilgina. Thank you, Claire. Thank you, Rex. Thank you. Great fun.